And oh, actually, I usually mean to turn on the Q&A. So I'm just going to do that now. So if you know, if we're going along and you hear something you want to ask about or comment about or whatever, then you can just jump in the queue by pressing star six, and then we'll also invite people in at the end as well. So here we are. Welcome to the members call. This is Kaylin Castell here with Eric Roth. We're looking at the month of December, and it's an amazing month. We're also, Eric, we didn't talk about any announcements prior to the call, but I'm imagining we just want to speak to the fact that we're replaying the 2020 summit. And I think you sent a link with the announcement about this call to that. We're also going to have a awesome. And then we can also maybe send a link to the 20 to the December 21st solstice celebration that we're going to be doing, looking at the year ahead and you know whatever else we come up with. Anyway, so and that's going to be happening soon as well, so within this month. And then, of course, we've got our in-person events that are happening here in Tucson, where I live. I love that. I don't have to travel, except maybe that I'll have to drive down to Gales. It's a long way to go, but from here, the looking at the enhancements to the shamanic astrology paradigm, end of February. And the a night sky weekend following that, with like a day in between those two events. So it's a rare opportunity to attend a live event, especially with Daniel involved. And is there anything else you want to say about that, Eric?
Well, just
the
hold on a second. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Are you getting an echo with me?
No, are you getting an echo?
I am, yeah.
I am, yeah.
I'm not
Let me
hearing
call
an echo.
back in.
Let me call back in.
Okay. Well, then I'm just going to go ahead and start talking about what's happening, and you can just jump in when you get back.
Okay, I'll just mention that, you know, we've got we talked about the event. There's a new incarnation of the Mars webinar series that's available now. And we also have a repackaged, you know, Kaylin, as you're aware, the Jupiter series. So people can take advantage of that. There's six recorded classes for that. Especially for people who didn't get the early classes, you know, you can get all of them for, you know, a great deal, especially as a member. So check that out on shamanicastrology.com. But I'm going to call back in just to make sure I cleared the echo.
Okay, awesome.
Thanks.
And so while Eric is checking back in, I'll also just say for those of you who maybe haven't signed up yet or would like to sign up, we will be having the first live class for the Venus first gate. The Venus's first gate will be December 3rd. A lot of amazing things happening with that gate. We'll talk a little bit about that tonight. And the class is in a couple days on November 28th. So if you go to venusalchemy.com, you can find out more about that particular class that's starting. And it's just this amazing, amazing time of the completion of the last Aries cycle in our lifetime. When we look at the heliacal rise, or when Venus rises up into the morning sky, and what's the sign that she's in, that's the overarching theme of the divine feminine for that entire 19-month cycle. And so from March 31st of 2017 to October 31st of 2018, we had the Aries metagoddess on the world stage, the wild warrior woman. And then on November 1st, we had the first appearance of the Libra metagoddess in 155 years. And it's the only time in 251 years that we have a handoff between the Aries metagoddess and the Libra metagoddess. And there's so many stories and myths and things that are coming up around this that are amazing. So I encourage you to check that out if that's something that speaks to you. So it looks like you're back, Eric?
Yes, thank you.
Awesome. Okay. So should we, I was wondering if maybe we should do the, you know, like where the planets are in the sky kind of as we connect with them, or should we just do them all up front? What do you think?
Well, I think we can do as what we did as the format before. We can talk about what's in the morning and what's in the evening, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So not much going on in the evening sky these days. I'll just say I think Saturn might be the lone planet out there in the evening sky. But something that's really interesting about what's going on with Saturn is that it's going to be dropping out of the evening sky. I forgot the exact date. I have to look that up again. Maybe you have it handy, Eric.
Coming up in the evening sky?
It's dropping out of the evening sky. Saturn drops out of the evening sky on December 16th, according to Jim Maynard's celestial calendar. So it won't be in the evening sky for much longer. And then it's going to be making its transition to the morning sky early next year. So basically it's Saturn's the only planet left in the evening sky. Everything else is in the morning sky.
Right.
Yep. And
you needed the date for when it comes out of the underworld?
No. When it dropped into the underworld it's December 16th. I don't, it's not going to come out until sometime in January.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure you got the info.
Right. Yes, I do. So Saturn's pretty low on the horizon now, and it's going to be getting harder and harder to see. And in fact, it may even be before December 16th that it's not visible. I don't have a good western horizon where I am, so I have to go somewhere to see it, and I haven't had a chance to check it out. So I don't know if you're still seeing it in the sky where you are, Eric.
No, I don't have a good view of the southwestern horizon where I am, and that's kind of where Saturn is. So I would have to drive over the hill, essentially, or around the hill in a different way to be able to see it. And there's a lot of, you know, trees and hills and so forth. So it's really low in the sky, and you know, you got to be basically on a really flat area. So, like, if I imagine, Caitlin, if you went down to the, you know, maybe the inner part of Tucson, you know, kind of on the eastern side, and look, you might be able to see it. But that's quite a bit of an effort to see Saturn, I'm sure.
Right, but I misspoke. I should have said Mars is also visible in the evening sky, still quite high and easy to see, and still somewhat bright. So maybe you want to talk about that.
Oh yeah, Mars is. I've been every time the clouds clear here, I've been able to see Mars, and there's a star that's below Mars that's really bright called Fomalhaut, and it's almost. Just about exactly where, as far as longitudinal-wise, you know, astrological degree is what we're talking about, where Mars is, just, you know, below that would be the star Fomalhaut, one of the prime stars, royal stars, you know, that kind of mark the mark the circle. So, so if you're noticing that bright star, if you're noticing Mars, you know, you get a pretty good indication about, because Fomalhaut sits about 4 degrees Pisces. And right now Mars is about 6 degrees, almost 7. and it's you know, but still, but Fomalhaut and Mars, you're going to see them together for quite a while throughout much of December, anyway.
Yes, yes, beautiful. And so now turning our attention to the morning sky, we have Venus and Jupiter. Jupiter is just moving into the morning sky and should be visible there by December 9th. And interestingly, Mercury is also moving into the morning sky and might technically be visible sooner than the time period given of December 3rd. It might not be visible around that time. It's probably more likely to be visible later. And, you know, but as Mercury is coming into the morning sky, it's not that bright. And it's also kind of in the glow of the sunrise initially. So, but it's going to rise very quickly. And ideally, by December 6th, it might be visible, more visible December 8th. It's at a zero magnitude. That's pretty bright, especially for Mercury. But by December 12th, it's going to be at a minus 0.5 to a minus 0.4 to a minus 0.5. And the lower the number, the brighter it is. So definitely by mid-month, it should be visible low on the horizon in the morning. And we'll also be making a really close conjunction to Jupiter around the time of the solstice, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go. So, do you want to talk about Jupiter, Eric?
Yeah, so Jupiter rises as a morning star, heliacal rise, on the 8th of December. You know, you might be able to see it on the 8th or the 9th, depending on your view of the horizon, but as the month goes on, it will become easier and easier to see because Jupiter is, it'll just keep, you know, brightening as the month goes on and into January. And so Jupiter's been, you know, in the underworld for over a month. And so now it's coming out pretty soon here, next couple weeks. So, and then of course, Kaylin, you mentioned the Mercury conjunction. And then you'll notice for everyone listening, by the end of the month, you know, you'll see fairly easily Mercury, Jupiter, and Venus in the morning sky. So that's a nice treat, especially the second half of December.
Yes, beautiful. Yeah, because Venus, of course, is the spotlight in the sky. She is so bright.
Yeah.
And she's getting near her maximum brightness, and then over the month in December, so she'll start out at like a minus 4.9 magnitude, super bright, and then she's going to fade a little bit, but I don't know that we're going to really notice it that much, to a minus 4.6 by the end of the month. And she's on her way towards greatest elongation, meaning highest in the sky, although it's greatest elongation from the sun, and that's not going to happen until January 6th. But according to Sky and Telescope, this will be highest on the horizon on December 13th. So she's going to, you know, from our perspective, she'll be as high as we can possibly see her at that particular time, even though she's not reached her greatest elongation yet. So that's pretty cool. And of course, we'll talk a little bit more about this maybe in a moment. We'll be talking about this, but yeah, Venus is at greatest elongation. Oh, I'm sorry, never mind. Wrong line I'm looking at there. Is the first gate of Venus, and so this might be a good place to start because in the cycle of Venus, once she goes direct and starts meeting with the moon in the Inanna story or the Ishtar story, this is where she begins her descent into the underworld and starts giving up her vestments that represent the chakras that also represent what she's letting go of, what she's releasing, any distortions around that particular chakra energy that she's releasing as she goes into the underworld. And so the first thing, of course, she gives up is her crown chakra, representing her connection to spirit or divine authority or something like that, however you want to look at that. And anything that's a distortion that's connected to that, so that when she makes the descent, it's like she has to, first thing she has to do is let go of that connection, so that she can have, when she makes her ascent and she retrieves her crown as the very last thing that she does. So the first thing she does on the descent is to let go of the crown. And then on the ascent, the last thing she does is reclaim it, and ideally a healthy relationship with that. And so, interestingly, on November 30th, Venus is exactly opposite Uranus. So at this first gate on December 3rd, with that crescent moon in the morning sky representing that gate, we have Venus still very close opposition to Uranus. And Uranus is the change agent. It, you know, it's about bringing in something that we might not be planning on or expecting. So I have this little quote I wanted to share that it really represents the Uranian effect that's energizing this particular Venus gate. And here, this is the quote. It's, "Unexpected events may feel like they're setting you back, when in reality they're setting you up for your next big leap. It's all about perspective." And of course, Uranus is all about perspective. It has to do with how we perceive our reality. And when we change our perception, we change our reality. And that's the gift that Uranus brings us. So I think that's about all I need to say about that. Anything you want to add, Eric?
No, I think you covered it. But I wanted to mention on December 1st, Vesta, the Astra Vesta, actually moves into the sign of Aquarius. It has been in Capricorn for several months, much of the summer, and of course the fall, because it went into opposition at the very beginning of summer in Sagittarius. So this is Vesta moves relatively slowly, usually anywhere from 2 to 3 months in a sign. And so it'll be spending all of the month of December in the sign of Aquarius. And Vesta represents our sacred heart, the inner fire within us, and what we honor as sacred. And for Aquarius, it would be very much similar to Uranus and the change agent, revolutionary ideas, novelty, innovation, thinking outside the mainstream. Is definitely a connection to the necessity of the celestial realm and how we can, embracing at times the irrational for its ability to help us break through our stuckness in life, our own limitations. And so that's something that Vesta and Aquarius symbolizes.
Yes, and so we have Vesta and Aquarius helping with that, and we've got Uranus opposite Venus helping with that.
Yep.
As we begin the month. So that's a pretty wild activation that's taking place. And also, just to back up just a little bit too, that Mercury's going into Scorpio on December 1st, and Venus is going into Scorpio on December 1st. So we have this intensity of the Scorpio element of, feeling what we feel. And I know Aquarius likes to go up and out and maybe be more in the mind, more in the, that detached place. But Scorpio is about taking us down and in into where we can really feel the depth of those feelings. So,
the really interesting polarity between up and out and into the primal realms of the underworld.
Right. So a simultaneous, it simultaneously, it feels like that's what's happening. as we begin December. And
sounds,
not only that,
very explosive, actually.
And you probably want to talk about the Sun Square Mars too on December 2nd.
Yeah, so this is it's a quadrature, is what they call it in astronomy and astrology, when the Sun and Mars are at a 90-degree angle, an L-shaped angle. So that means when the Sun is setting, Mars is roughly, at halfway across the sky, across in the where the ecliptic is. And so where it is, of course, it'll be in the water bearer, exiting the water bearer and moving toward the eastern part of the sky. But from our perspective, it looks like, because the Sun is catching up with it. And that's just it's one of the symbols that we're definitely in the thick of the phase two of Mars, of this Mars synodic cycle, which phase two began when Mars came back to its original degree of opposition in September, where it was back in July. So it's now, approaching is what we call the third challenge, the third labor, just like as a very loose, rough similarity to Venus, and only that it's conjunct with the moon. But that happens later in the month. So that's what I wanted to share on the Mars thing.
Beautiful. Yeah, so, wow. And we have Aquarius overtone Mars to add to the whole Aquarian thing we were just talking about as well.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't mention the sign. So Mars just recently moved into Pisces in November, and it'll be staying in Pisces almost all the way till the very end when it moves into Aries, just on the 31st. And so, with the Sun in Sagittarius, that gives you another idea of how, what area of the sky these planets are in. If you know the Sun's in Sag, and you see Mars or another planet that's 90 degrees away, then you know that it's in the same modality but in a different sign. So what's the next sign over from that would be, the modality of Sagittarius and Pisces. That's classically, traditionally mutable, but in our shamanic astrology paradigm, it's in service to spirit, so it kind of helps educate you when you can see them out in the sky, and hey, they're both occupying in service to spirit modalities there.
Beautiful. And then on December 5th, we have the Sun square Neptune. Now Neptune stationed direct on November 24th, just a couple of days ago from the time we're doing this recording. So we're still in that station point. And one of the things about the station point is that it is a still point and an access to all possibilities. And Neptune is also about all possibilities. And then on December 5th, when the Sun square Neptune happens, it lets us know that Neptune is starting to move a little bit more. It's always, the square will always happen after the station direct, or if it's going to go retrograde, the Sun square to a planet, an outer planet, will happen before it goes retrograde. So that's always a signal either one way or the other to let us know where it is in that particular cycle. And an opportunity to get some inspiration and insight from the illumination of the source of light and life for our planet, the Sun. Kind of cool.
Yeah, Neptune went direct not too long ago here.
On the 24th, yeah.
Yep.
At right around 1342 Pisces, it went direct. So if you have planets, angles, or nodes in that degree, and actually between that degree and about 16 and a half Pisces, you've been in a Neptune cycle, and this is marking that, you know, as it's getting ready to move forward even more quickly, it'll mark the end of that. And so I have to say I'm kind of excited because I've been in Neptune to my sun, my 14-degree Pisces sun, so I'm ready for that to be done. It's been fun.
I hear you. Same thing, my 14-degree Jupiter Sagittarius. I'm ready for Neptune to get to 15 degrees.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, it's okay to be confused for a little while, but it's nice to start having more clarity come back in.
Yes.
So, yeah. Yeah. And so then we have a new...
Yep, go ahead.
We have the new moon on the following day, then the moon in Sagittarius at about 15 degrees Sagittarius. And so, of course, this is connecting to Jupiter because the moon and Jupiter are conjunct prior to this new moon. We won't see that either of them because they're with the sun. But Jupiter's also being included in this new moon. So there's, what are the seeds that we're planting? What are the intentions that we have, especially around our quest for truth and meaning, and the quest for expansion of consciousness? And, you know, hopefully we're taking that to new horizons that, are more, supportive of everyone experiencing greater consciousness and awareness within themselves. So, and then of course on that day also Mercury stationing direct, and it's at like 27 Scorpio where it's stationing direct, and meaning that is the new overtone on the Mercury cycle that will last about 120 days or so. So that deep dive into the, it's like the, how do we experience the mental realms through the feeling realms, especially the deep and intense and passionate realm of Scorpio. So, anything else you want to say about that?
It creates the overtone of the cycle, or the, the sign, the overarching sign that's kind of operating here for Mercury's transiting, over the next 4 months. The next day we have Mars and Neptune in conjunction. So, you know, as of the time of this call, Mars is about 6 degrees away from Neptune. So, you know, it doesn't take that long for Mars to catch up. But this is, being Aquarius overtone, and now in another celestial sign, Pisces, and then in conjunction with Neptune, we can ask ourselves if the masculine being able to let go of previous notions of what it represents and allowing it to get lost in the openness of the vast cosmos itself. And then also, at the same time, an opening of the heart space, the feeling function, being able to connect with empathy and being of service. How can it meet this... its responsibility in some respects of being of service to others and to the divine. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a theme of this. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, just the fact that Mercury is stationing direct in Scorpio, and that has to do with the feeling realm, and then Mars and Pisces conjunct Neptune, maximizing and amplifying the feeling realm as mm-hmm. well. And if we think about it, in the patriarchal culture, what's been valued is more linear, left brain, logical, rational thinking. Now, I don't know that is necessarily a masculine quality, but it has been assigned as a masculine quality. And I think that perhaps this is an opportunity to see that it's not necessarily that, and that everyone pretty much has been conditioned to that way of perceiving reality, communicating about reality, experiencing reality, all of that. So it's an incredible opportunity for us to really be more in the place of bringing the mind into connection with the feelings and finding that balance between the two, so that sometimes it's good to have rational thinking, but sometimes it's good to just be open to that inner knowing, that felt sense that comes, that doesn't necessarily make logical sense, but is often really spot on. So.
Yeah, that's. Thank you for bringing that up. It's kind of an feelings, emotions. They're not rational. They have nothing to do with rationality or logic. They occupy in a completely different space. And we've been living in this, as you said, conditioned, especially in the last three centuries, the age of rationality, the age of enlightenment, as some of them called it. It's kind of overkilled cultures, especially in the West, of this rationality. It's kind of maximized itself, and now we're at a time of transformation and change around that, especially around the patriarchy and their projection of that onto everything. That we can use the mind or the intellect to figure everything out, including including emotions, including the divine, but it's not just one or the other. It's all, and so it's incorporating the wisdom of the heart and the soul, the wisdom of the feelings. I don't want to get into it. I've been reading this book about the neurobiology of gods and goddesses and archetypes. And it's pretty remarkable, but it confirms a lot of what Jung talked about around the archetypes in their own life, and especially around our emotional connection and how very vital they are to our existence, they occupy quite a lot of who we are and what moves us to make decisions in our lives. I can go on from there, but I don't want to take up this whole call on that. Thank you for bringing that up, Caitlin.
You're welcome. Moving right along, we've got a moon occultation over Saturn on the 8th and 9th, depending, it's like 9 p.m., Pacific time on the 8th, and then it's of course just after midnight in Eastern time, and then if you're further east in further Eastern time zones, it's going to be definitely on the 9th. But this is not going to be visible unless you happen to be in southeastern Russia or the northern tip of China. But occultations, and it's interesting.
I'm booking my flight tomorrow.
have very many planetary occultations this year. Particularly, we had a couple over Mercury, one over Mars, one over Venus. This is the only one over Saturn, so the visible planets, these are the only ones. And of course, that several of those occultations were too close to the sun to be seen. So the thing to know is that when the moon occults a planet, it is an acceleration similar to what happens in an eclipse. So it's accelerating whatever we're holding in intention and in consciousness. And so the fact that there is this occultation happening when the moon goes over Saturn on the 8th or 9th is something just to be aware of. And it might be possible to see the crescent moon with Saturn, not in an occultation situation, but on the, because the new moon is you know, happening on the 6th and 7th. So by the 8th, it should be, there should be a crescent moon visible in the sky with Saturn, and definitely worth stepping out and seeing. So on December 8th, definitely the moon is below Saturn, and then on the 9th, it's above Saturn. So if you get a chance to see it, if you have clear skies, worth tuning into to see what might be coming through for you around that. And then, of course, the next day on December 9th is a moon occultation over Pluto, and we can't see Pluto. But when you go out to see the moon that night, you can know that it's very close to Pluto, and also create an acceleration there. And this seems really significant when we think about this lead up to 2020. So here we have these occultations taking place in this month of December, as we approach the December solstice in the time of Capricorn, where we have Saturn and Pluto in Capricorn, and next year Jupiter will join them, and at the end of December, or in December of 2019. And then in 2020, we have this remarkable lineup, very rare, 733 years since we've had it, 734 years till we have it again. And it's just speaking to how it's time to prepare, to really think about it. So if you haven't had a chance to, if you didn't see the 2020 summit last year when we reran it, or when we first ran it, then definitely check it out this year. And I think there's a link that you can tune into that Eric will probably include when he sends the recording as well, to sign up for that, for the free replay of the summit.
Yes. Also on the 8th, Chiron stations direct at 2753 Pisces. So it'll be its last stationing direct in the sign of Pisces for, several decades here until it, you know, it takes about 50 years, you know, from one point to the next, as it comes around on its return. But so for those of you who have any personal points in the last degrees of Pisces, this will be your last pass. Chiron will be moving into the sign of Aries for close to 7 years, I believe. It'll be in that sign for its. There was a class you and Daniel did when it first moved into Aries before it backed out earlier this year, and now it's going back. And that's so it's basically dancing around. As you know, as some of you know, the that area of the sky, that's where the vernal equinox is, the March equinox point. And so, you know, that's a remarkable place right there with the fish constellation. Obviously, Chiron is not visible, but it is worth meditating on that area of the sky. As long as you kind of, you know, you can even, if you know where to look, you can know that Chiron is sitting in that space, and something to connect with the as it moves direct. So it's focusing, and any type of planet is stationing retrograde or stationing direct, it's a focusing of the astrological archetypal energy there. And so whatever it's focusing upon is something that we want to focus upon as a collective, or if you're on a personal cycle, in a personal way.
Yeah, you know, this is also that kind of 8th and 9th thing, because I think in my time zone it's happening on the 9th, because that's what I wrote down. You said the 8th, so it might be in the more Western time zones it's happening on the 8th, and then, it's like one of those crossovers. Yeah, so just something to just note that, you know, being tuned in on the 8th and the 9th at the same time. And if you go out to see the Moon-Saturn conjunction on the 8th and 9th, then you can also know that that there's this thing happening with Chiron as well as it's stationing direct. And So moving along, we're going to have Mercury move into Sagittarius on the 12th, where so it's going to be in the head of the Scorpion about that time. And it'll be crossing by a star called Dashuba, meaning it's the eye of the Scorpion. So something just to be conscious of. When you see that in the early morning sky, you may see three stars kind of to the lower right of Mercury, and Jupiter is below that. And so it's this, and so those three stars, one of them, I think it's the center one, is the eye, is considered the eye of the Scorpion or the dragon. So pretty cool.
You know, some people or some astronomers or some literature calls it the head of the Scorpion. But, you know, that it's basically the same thing. It's our sensory area, and the eye is an apt description. And, of course, the other two stars, Akrab, which is the one above or to the left, that's the one of the claws or arms of the Scorpion. And so, and then Antares below that, but you'll get people will get a little bit better view when we get to the solstice time, of depending on their sky.
Yes, perhaps, yeah. So also something just to, that's not really astrologically related, but on the 12th, the 12-12, of December 12th is considered the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and she is one of the main goddesses, I guess we could say, of the Americas. And they have huge celebrations. I know they do here in Tucson and all around. So something to be aware of. It's got some number magic connected to it, the 12-12. So
12-12 with the Guadalupe?
Yeah, the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Got it. Feast day. I missed that part.
Yeah. Yeah, so they do lots of big celebrations all over. Some people do pilgrimages and marches, and, you know, they do big stuff here in Tucson. So anyway, also then on December 14th is the peaking of the Geminid meteor shower. And they think it'll be pretty good viewing because the crescent moon will set before the shower really gets going, and it's one of the most prolific meteor showers that we have. So if you get a chance and you step outside and you see meteors, you'll know why.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. Then we have on the 14th the third Moon-Mars conjunction since the Mars phase 2 began in September, as I mentioned earlier in this call. This is taking place at 18 degrees, 39 minutes Pisces. So roughly a little bit more than halfway through the sign of Pisces. Mars is about 85 degrees from the sun at that point. And so when we, in the Mars cycle, how Daniel has looked at this originally, and we keep exploring this in the Mars webinar series and just in the school in general with everyone. But each of these challenges or tasks, or what we call labors as well, these can be looked at as markers, checkpoints in the growth of the masculine. In that part of the sky, Mars is sitting there kind of in between the water bear and the fish. It's kind of in that empty space there in between the constellations. And so there's a lot of powerful creative energy there. Some of the same terms and descriptions I was using earlier about opening up the heart and the triggering of the masculine in a more, what some astrologers or some psychologists even might even say the more feminine way. But really, it's the heart space within the masculine and its relationship to the feminine, and how it can utilize its the feeling function, how it can utilize its sense of spirit and connection to spirit, and operate from that modality, that way of being, and at the same time also have its eye in the sky, you know, being able to see the bigger picture. You know, as this is an Aquarius overtone. So this is definitely a, each of these Mars-Moon conjunctions is potent. And I'm in a personal Mars return, and I've definitely been feeling quite a bit of intensity around this particular cycle. And for each person, it's going to be a little bit different depending on the makeup of their chart and what is the intent of the chart and so forth. So something to pay attention to, and Mars Moon, always a really nice sight to see, and especially with Mars high in the sky at this point and easily visible.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out and going in out and tuning in to what's the transmission coming in from Moon and Mars in the sky. So unless you have something else, I think we can maybe jump to the December solstice.
We talked about Saturn already disappearing, so on the 15th, right?
Right.
So that's
officially
it's on the 16th at 15 degrees, but it's, 99.5 degrees Capricorn, 934. But it all depends on where you are on the globe and how clear your skies are. So, we can move on to solstice.
If you have a high horizon, it'll disappear a lot sooner. So if you have a low horizon, you may see it for a longer time. So the December solstice is on the 21st, and this is when the sun enters Capricorn, and we're going to be doing a call, a webinar at that time to celebrate the solstice as well as look at some of the remarkable events. And we'll just give you a preview here because there's that Mercury-Jupiter conjunction within a degree that will be beautiful to see in the morning sky. There's also the full moon that's happening just hours after the exact solstice. And at zero Cancer. So the moon, the very full moon, will be at the galactic cross, at the galactic edge, so the opposite part of the sky of where the sun is. And it's not that often that we have the sun on the galactic cross at the galactic center and the moon on the galactic cross at the galactic edge, a full moon at the same time. So that's pretty remarkable. And the other thing about this, I think those are the main things that I can see. So anything else, Eric, around the solstice?
You talked about Jupiter and Mercury?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Just double checking my notes. So yeah, that is the planets will be about 20 degrees from the sun. It also, depending on, again, how your space is, a really great look at, where these planets are in their relationship and checking to see the degrees of the planets and knowing where the stars are in the sky. The planets are really good markers, especially when they're referenced and connected to the sun and the moon. Then you can really get a greater idea. But yeah, that full moon right there inside the sign of Cancer, just not even 1 degree. So there's really not much else. Of course, you and Daniel will be talking to great length on the class next month. So
yeah. Yeah, so just one more that I wanted to, the wanted to remember to say, and that is that Saturn disappears from the sky the 15th or 16th, or maybe even sooner, depending, as we've talked about. And it does not catch up to the sun this year. So basically, the Saturn conjunction will happen on January 1st. And what's remarkable about this is that doesn't happen that often, that there's a whole year that goes by without Saturn and the sun. And Eric and I were talking about this before the call, and he was saying, well, you know, Gregorian calendar, and I get that. And the thing to keep in mind is that Saturn and the sun were conjunct in at the December solstice last year. And we talked a lot about that piece and the significance of that then, because it doesn't happen that often that Saturn goes into the sign of Capricorn with the sun. And, of course, the sun being on the galactic cross, and that's only something that happens for a time period every 26,000 years, happens to be happening now. So Saturn and the sun were on the galactic cross at the December solstice last year. And this, and so from the solstice last year to the solstice this year is no Saturn-Sun conjunction, or to the end of the year, not till January 1st. So this last happened in 1989, and you could go back to 1960 before that, and that it skipped over having a sun conjunction. Usually it does it every year at some point within the year, and it won't happen again until 2048 that we don't have Saturn conjunct the sun in a calendar year, or even if you look at a solar year from December solstice to December solstice. So yeah, pretty remarkable. what's up with that? You know, tuning in, I don't really have an answer to that. It's something I'm just noticed within the last few days, and I'm just tuning into myself. So I may have a more insight about that as we go along, but perhaps somebody will have some thoughts about that, unless you have something, Eric.
No, just to say that it happened twice before in the sign of Capricorn. And in 2048, I'm assuming it's going to be in Capricorn again, right? When that takes place with no conjunction that year.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. So the only other thing that I wanted to talk about was the New Year's Eve. So is there anything that you want to say that's happening before that?
Yeah, there's the 27th, Venus and the asteroid Ceres, or dwarf planet Ceres, are in conjunction at 1916 Scorpio. And we don't talk about the asteroids too much here, but it's remarkable in that at the same time, they'll be in opposition to Juno, the asteroid Juno in Taurus at 20 degrees, 22 minutes. So it's almost an exact, within 1 degree of an exact opposition at that time, the feminine principle, Venus, and the great mother, essentially the great mother, Ceres. And I think that especially the Ceres and connected to the Ceres Demeter Persephone myth and the takeover of the patriarchy, where there's several other kinds of stories along those lines. You know, it's basically the abuse, the pillaging of the feminine and the stealing of the feminine power at that time. And so Venus connected to Ceres here in Scorpio, this is, this is a really, I think, a very apt placement for that conjunction, considering how powerful Scorpio had been and was feared by the ruling patriarchy for many, many centuries. And so this is a chance for those two archetypal energies to get together to have dialogue, to feel into that, to move the collective to the next stage of helping us with being able to understand and have dialogue around, to not be keep burying this fact, to bring it out into the open. And I say that in part because it's a Libra overtone, so we're having this this connection, this cross connection, and you know, a co-creative, a collaborative dialogue with others. And so it's bringing that shadow into a sense of into the open, into something of conscious, you know, our consciousness, so we can have conversations. And we're, of course, I think this is just a great symbol for what's been happening in recent years along the lines with the feminine in general in the collective. So it's, I think it's a pretty powerful message here.
I imagine that they might be having a conversation because Venus, as Inanna would say, well, I'm choosing to go to the underworld, whereas Cirrus's daughter was abducted and forced to go to the underworld. It wasn't a choice. So so how do we reclaim that choice piece in a way that works and supportive and blah, blah, blah. So
absolutely.
It's great.
We reclaim it in a way that works and is supportive. You're right on.
Yep, absolutely. So just the last piece then is that we say this every year, and I just love to say it because it's so cool, that at midnight on December 31st, or as we approach midnight on December 31st, Sirius is right overhead. And so there's a lot of information out there about how this is like this download of Sirian light energy that's beaming towards humanity on this day, January 1st or December 31st, crossover to January 1st, that is, you know, just an arbitrary date that was chosen to start a year, so it wasn't connected to a solstice or an equinox. And yet we have this remarkable thing that happens, so that the Sirius energy really infuses the magnetic grid of the Earth as we begin a new year. And so, you know, I feel like it's kind of fun to just be aware of that and to celebrate that and support to tune into whatever that energy is, whatever those messages might be that are beaming in for us as we end a year and begin a year. So that's all I have. Anything else, Eric, before we open it up for questions?
Just to remind everyone, on December 31st also, Mars moves into the sign of Aries. So that's at that, you know, vernal equinox point, that March equinox point right there. So it would have already passed Chiron on its way. I didn't mention that. So I just wanted to share that point, but that's all.
Awesome. All right, so we have someone in the queue. If I'm going to open up your line, Emma, in just a minute, but if you want to have a comment, a question, something about you specifically, you know, and how this might relate to you, please feel free to ask, and here we go. Hi, Emma.
Hi. I have an interesting thing going on in December. I have a Mercury in Scorpio and Mercury overtone, so I'm going into my overtone, my synodic return. And it's happening at 27 degrees 20 Pisces. I'm sorry, Scorpio. And that's my birth Mercury is at 27, 40 degrees Scorpio. And I thought that's been powerful, and it's sort of like I've been working up to this, and this Mercury retrograde time has been extremely confusing for me. I mean, everything I think, I'm saying the opposite of what I'm thinking, and it's like with Mercury in Scorpio, I think that really, really enhances the connection with the subconscious mind. And I often look and think about the things that I'm saying and thinking, where did that come from? That's not from my conscious mind. That's from something else. So it's been a very exciting time. And then at the same time, Neptune has now, I've been in the last couple of years a Neptune, my Neptune opposite Neptune. And it's been playing back and forth between 10, 13, 14 degrees in here. And my Mercury and my Neptune in my birth chart is at 12 degrees Virgo, which is conjunct Moon and conjunct Vesta. And so it's been a time for me to, I've really started looking at the power of Mercury in Scorpio. My Mercury is direct, and the only, in my birth chart, the only energy that it really makes a connection with is an opposite to Chiron at my birth. There are no other major aspects that Mercury forms in my birth chart. Now, there's some trines, and there's a square to the nodes, but otherwise, as far as the personal planets are concerned, so it's been a very enlightening and a very confusing time at the same time.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that, Emma. Are you looking for insight, or do you feel like you're figuring it out?
Well, I think I got it figured out. And then all of a sudden, I guess I'm going to have to wait until Mercury goes direct before I even put any form to my inner insights. Yeah? Because everything seems to be and so strongly influenced with that energy of that Neptune is doing in this opposition that I really don't know where I'm at. And I just want to let everybody know that it's okay to feel that way. You know, that's what my resolution is right now. I'm supposed to be experiencing this. I'm feeling it. Don't get upset about it. It's just part of your life that you're living.
You know, you're bringing up a really important point, and that is that how our culture has conditioned us to feel like we should know who we are and where we're going at all the time. And Neptune is a total antidote for that. Because it's like...
Yeah. Right? And right before, when all of this is happening, it's just prior to my, a couple of days prior to my birthday. So I haven't done a solar return to see if the return is on the 9th or 10th or the 11th. And once I get that done, then I'll have I'll have a little bit more insight as to what's going on there, I hope.
Yeah. Well, I join you in your place of not knowing. I think Eric probably does too. And,
yes.
Yeah, and, you know, we can just all be in this together, right?
Yeah. And this is wonderful. What's so wonderful about the school is that if you're going through a confusing time, there's always a class or something or other going on when you can where you can discuss this or with some of your friends. And I think shamanic astrology has been a real, real blessing in my life.
Thank you, Emma. You've been a blessing in the school for the school as well. So thank you so much.
It's well received.
Awesome. All right. So now we're going to move on. I don't know who this is, but I just opened your mic. Maybe you can tell me.
Hey darling. This is Sayo.
Oh, Sayo, oh my gosh. So good to hear from you.
Yeah, likewise. You, Eric, everyone. Just a couple of quick comments. I love Emma's explanation of what's happening with her. And I join all of you because Neptune has been square my sun and Mars, seems like for centuries now. But I'm dealing with it. And I just want to remind everybody that in the Carlos Castaneda books, Don Juan explained that confusion is the time when we have the impetus to search and seek and grow, much more so than when we're clear. When we're clear, we tend to relax, you know, go to parties, maybe read a good book. But boy, let confusion set in, and we say, oh, I don't like this. I gotta, you know, gotta find some new clues here. So, you know, kudos to confusion.
with you on that one.
that's one thing. And then very quickly, because I know we're running over here, the Sun-Saturn thing that you all mentioned about the, it seemed like about every 30 years goes through that period of not being the two not being conjunct. And it's happening in Capricorn, and it happened, did you say last year or this year, Kayla? This year?
It's happening. It's not going to make a conjunction this year. Last year it did.
Okay.
Solstice. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So lately I have been inspired to recognize that the sun is pure spirit. Pure spirit. It's just the fire of spirit. So when it is conjunct the planet, we are getting, that planet is being fired up by the purity of spirit in a way that it never is otherwise. So that lack of conjunction you all are speaking of, and if we look at this year, I think what's happening there is Saturn. And if you think about Trump and politics and that whole thing, it's like the sun is not endorsing that. God is not supporting that. You know, it's just kind of out there. They're out there on their own doing what they're doing. And the energy of pure spirit is doing something else. I just put it that way. Maybe I shouldn't say it's not supporting them, although I don't think it is. Pure non-dualistic spirit. I don't think it's supporting them. I think it's supporting the other end of the pole. And I think this year is testimony to the reality that the sun represents that when it's conjunct a planet. Do you follow me there?
Yes, I like that insight a lot, and I'm going to play with that some more.
yeah, that's what I'm doing. I've been working with it in readings, and it seems to bear out. So anyway, that's that, and it's good to hear you all. I love you all.
Good to hear you too, Kayla. It's been a long time. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah. That was great insight there.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. Now I think we have Mary. Mary, are you there? If you are talking, you must be muted.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now.
I have to take my headset off in order for you to hear me. There's something goofy with that. A quick question and then a fun observation. The neurobiology of the gods and goddesses and their archetypes, Eric, could you give us the name of that book you're reading? It sounds so fascinating.
Oh, yes, I can. I've been taking it in small slices because it's a really thick book. but it is called The Neurobiology of the Gods by the author's name is Eric Goodwin. And it's the subtitle is How Brain Physiology Shapes the Recurrent Imagery of Myths and Dreams.
That sounds cool. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of influence from Jung in the author's background.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you. The other thing is you were discussing about Chiron going back into the late degrees of Pisces, which is where my north node is. I've been aware of that, but I happened to just glance through some of my other bi-wheels, and my eye fell on my father in my chart, and I saw his Chiron was right there exactly at that point. And I find it humorous because he's probably the source of most of my wounding. and so if this is releasing that, I think that's really interesting. Would you agree that someone's Chiron right on your north node would associate them with your wounding or their wounding with your wounding?
So, Mary, one of the ways that we look at somebody else's planet on your north node, or a planet you have on their north node, it's like that person is either a teacher for you in that regard, or you're a teacher for them in whatever regard that might be. So with Chiron, it could be that whatever the encounter is creates a wounding in order for a possibility of healing, that it would come from that person to you as part of your destiny. Like that person agreed, showed up, and played the role they played like a prior agreement coming into this life, right? let me chronic force, Rio. So, yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And what came to light for me just recently was how my my reaction to his behavior has caused me to avoid people that are highly volatile, and that includes my daughter-in-law. I just really recently realized that has stopped me from being closer to not just her but my grandchildren. And that's part of that wound, is that, and that's a teaching. That's a really neat teaching, to be able to push through your own fear and your own reaction to things that were originally created from fear. Deep within your core. It's really interesting. Very interesting.
That is such a good insight for you.
Mary, how close is that conjunction?
Well, it's within 1 degree.
Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah, it's less than, I'm at 28 Pisces, 28, and he's at 29 Pisces, 05.
Yeah. Wow.
So it was like magically opened and fell in my lap just as you were doing your program.
Awesome. Well, thank you
for what you do. You bring so much, and it's so exciting to see it getting bigger and brighter all the time. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Okay, and now we have, I think, Annalise.
Hi.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah,
okay,
I hear
sorry,
you.
Got it. My phone's connected to the car, so it's sometimes a little weird. I love how everyone's chiming in tonight. I really liked, I think his name was Sam's Insight. I don't know. I really like that. And I'm really glad you guys are making the 2020 Summit available, so thanks for that.
Welcome.
So my question, I have a Pluto question. I have been looking at quite a few friend charts lately that have some Pluto complexes. Particularly Pluto to the moon and Pluto to Mars or Venus. And I've just finished a Pluto cycle and like listened to the teleclass, which really helped me, and it was so spot on, and some of the other course material that I have from you guys. I could go on and on about that. It was just so on point, and so it was such a transformative time. Like, wow. But basically, my question is, I'm kind of not sure of the difference, if there is much of a difference between a Pluto square and a Pluto conjunction, you know, like a complex, like whether it's to the moon or to Venus or Mars particularly, because that's what I've been seeing.
Curious what you guys think.
Yeah, you know, it's a very slight difference. You could say it's like the difference between a new moon and a first quarter moon or a last quarter moon. Ultimately, when Pluto's in the house, you're going to go through what you go through. It is, it's going to dismantle whatever needs to be dismantled in order to empower you. So there's not a lot of difference between a conjunction, opposition, or a square. So,
okay.
That answers your question.
So what matters if, it just matters that it's a dynamic aspect.
Yeah, if you're in a dynamic aspect with Pluto transit, you're going to feel Pluto pretty much the same as any other aspect, you know, whether it's a conjunction or a square opposition, yeah. So, beautiful. Thank you for that question, and thank you for the your enthusiasm about what we do here at Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. Woohoo!
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it. I always want to comment on the monthly, like, the talks you guys give, but usually I have to replay it and kind of digest it first. Anyway.
Aw. Yeah. Thanks. So, all right. Do you feel complete, Annalise?
Yes.
Okay. Awesome.
So, Kaylin, I just have one thought. Because I know it's even in the handbook and some of the handouts, there is a slight difference, like, in the dynamic aspects if you, like, boil it down to its essence. But ultimately, they do come out. They just use a little bit slightly different, like, energy to create the space for you to experience that evolution in yourself. Which the outcome is intended to be similar in the sense of, like, conjunction is more this sinistrious energy, between two points, and the squares are looked at as like there's a place of tension to make a decision, and then the opposition would be like a full moon. There's a highlighting, but again, Kaylin, I just wanted to. In case people wanted to look those up, I wanted to share those because I get asked those questions too. I have to, but I treat them when I redo a reading, I treat them very much the same.
Yeah.
So I just thought maybe that would be helpful.
Yeah, thank you. I have to say that I appreciate that those could be felt as differences, but honestly, whenever I've been in a Pluto cycle, it doesn't matter if it's been a conjunction, square, or opposition, it feels exactly the same to me.
I hear you on that one, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, that's awesome. All right, well, I think we're complete for the this month. Really appreciate all the great interaction, and we hope you have a great solstice. I hope you join us for our 2020 summit replay and also for the December solstice celebration that we're going to do on December 21st, actually on the day of the solstice, and that amazing Jupiter-Mercury conjunction and whatever else is going on.
Yeah, there should be several members of the board there too. I'll be on the call.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School Council. We'll, as many as can make it, will be there. And you'll be able to ask lots of personal questions, and it should be a fun time. So we hope we see you there. So happy holidays, everybody, and we look forward to connecting with you down the road.